Hi, I'm Dan Webster, film critic for Spokane Public Radio and blogger for Spokane7.com.
And I'm Mary Pat Truthart, part-time film critic, full-time law professor at Gonzaga University School of Law.
And I'm Nathan Weinbender, also a film critic for Spokane Public Radio.
And welcome to Movies 101, that show that likes to take a universal view of cinema, which means, to be honest, that at least two of us like to watch movies made in foreign countries that we have visited. Two of the movies that all three of us will discuss this week were filmed in countries that Mary Pat and I have spent time in. The first one is Undine, a German film that works as a modern version of an old European myth. The second is The Dry, a detective story set in Australia's interior. And the third is Super Frenchy, a documentary made by Spokane filmmaker Chase Ogden about the French-born extreme skier Mathias Giraud. Let's begin this week's show by going underwater. Well, at least virtually, because that is the basis of Undine, which is playing at the Magic Lantern Theater. Written and directed by German filmmaker Christian Petzold, Undine is based on a myth that dates back to ancient Greece. That myth, which has been explored in various forms, a 1939 French play by Jean Giraudoux, for example, involves a water nymph who turns into a human when she falls in love with a human man. The problem is that she will die if he cheats on her. Petzold changes things slightly. His Undine, played by Paula Beer, works as an architectural museum docent who, when we first meet her, is being dumped by her boyfriend, Jacob Matschens. Only it is she who tells him that if he does leave her, he has to die. Foreshadowing. Instead of that happening, though, Undine meets Christoph, Franz Rogowski, who just happens to have his own relationship with water, his being a hard hat diver. The two fall in love and, well, things can't end okay, even if Petzold doesn't follow the myth exactly. Beer, who won the Silver Bear Award at the Berlin Film Festival, starred previously with Rogowski in Petzold's 2018 film Transit. Both are perfectly believable here in a story that is, at its core, a blend of the real and the wetly fantastic.
I appreciated this take on this old story. And Nathan, you can weigh in with your popular cultural reference later. But it seems to me that it's a commentary, not only on this sort of notion of mermaids and water nymphs and creatures from beyond, but it also is a perfect metaphor in some respects for, you know, what's happening in Berlin, which is the setting of where this Undine is located. And our docent, and supposedly she has a degree in history, and so she's going to tell people who come to visit Berlin, mostly tour groups of foreigners, about the city and its metamorphosis. And that's where this sort of parallel comes in, because we do have this city that's undergoing these changes, and it's her goal to point out these differences to people who come to her lectures.
And the history that's involved there, yeah.
Right, including the ultimate male protagonist, Christoph, who happens to catch one of her lectures one day, and that's how they sort of meet cute, although that happens a few minutes later in a restaurant, where again, as you point out, foreshadowing, there is an incidente where each of them ends up covered with water. So I think that if you're going to look at this as a tale, as a fable, I think it works better. If you look at it as a straightforward presentation of what's happening among this group of people, I don't know if it works all the time, but I did appreciate the attempt to make something new out of something very old. And the fact that we do have these A-list German actors to bring this all to life for us.
Yeah, well, and Christian Petzold is such an interesting filmmaker. I mean, he really loves, and this isn't the case with all of his movies, but he really loves a mysterious female protagonist who has a secret in her past or ulterior motives that either we know about and no one else in the movie knows about, or that just she knows about and we're not even in on. I mean, if you go back to some of his earlier movies like Barbara or my favorite, which is Phoenix, which both starred Nina Hoss. And then the last film he did, Transit, as you mentioned, which had these two actors in it as well, which was sort of a weird kind of unstuck in time riff on Casablanca of all things. And this movie is, I think you've done a good job of summing up sort of the themes here with regard to the architecture of Berlin. There's sort of a conversation going on about facades that have been erected to remind people of the past, of buildings that were destroyed or taken down. And now there's almost like a sort of like a substitute building that's been put in its place. And there are kind of themes that run through the movie that allude to that. And as a fable, I mean, Neil Jordan also made a film about a decade ago that was based on the same myth with Colin Farrell in it. And now we have this one. This is the second movie in a row from him that hasn't totally worked for me. And I'm still not sure why. I just saw it last night and I almost wish I had given myself more time between seeing it and talking about it to really kind of reflect on it or even get a chance to see it again, because I'm still not totally sure what it's really about. And it's so short. It's like barely under 90 minutes. And right as we kind of get the sense of what's going on here, the movie's over. And I almost feel like it needed more time to breathe. And I sort of feel like Petzold's, he's kind of playing around with us here. He's deliberately withholding things from us, suggesting kind of a fantastical elements that are kind of creeping into this otherwise earthbound or waterbound love story. And then I don't know, it even though it's short, it sort of takes its time getting to where it's going. And then by the time it gets there, we're kind of already in the home stretch. And I didn't really feel anything by the end of this. I think we were supposed to feel some kind of swooning romanticism or maybe this kind of eerie suggestion of you know, fairy tale violence. But it just didn't click with me. I wonder, and I've been meaning to go back and look at Transit because I was in the minority of not really liking that movie. And I wonder if seeing it again, it would really click for me and I'd kind of finally get what he was going for, as opposed to a movie like Phoenix, which I think works like gangbusters the first time you see it. So yeah, this one I'm not totally sure about. I'm curious to know what you thought, Dan, because I'm not jiving with this one and I'm not totally sure why yet.
Well, I'm still intrigued by, of all the film references that you're talking about, you don't mention the one that you told me through text, the American movie that you thought this reminded you of.
Yes, I made a joke that said that was a very weird reboot of Splash, which if you which asked, I was being funny, but there are a lot of parallels here to the
my question movie. was which character in this movie was the John Candy character, and you said
I said it was the catfish that
it's a huge catfish, yeah.
It's a huge catfish, and it becomes a symbol as the film goes on of many things, I think you could say.
Well, you know, you mentioned other films that have, you know, the Neil Jordan film that had a reference to a kind of water nymph history. And that reminded me of John Sayles' The Secret of Rowan Inish.
Oh, sure.
Another one, which talks about, you know, a guy falling in love with some sort of a water nymph. And so as opposed to going back to ancient Greece and everything else, this is a theme that keeps coming up. I'm somewhere in between the two of you in terms of liking this film, because I like anything that just keeps me going. And the movie Undina kept me going all the way through. And if at the end I went, okay, this is where we're ending up, it still didn't spoil the trip there. So I love the way he makes movies. And I love the two main stars. And Paula Beer, of course, she's wonderful. But I am fascinated by Rogowski, who is a guy who is not traditionally handsome in any way, and yet he can play attractive.
Well, and I think that we probably cannot fully understand the backstory and the context, because even though we visited Berlin, I think that the whole notion of a divided city and its history and trying to blend things together now.
And the rebuilding of that city, right, because exactly. It was totally virtually raised during World War II. So, right.
So there are probably some things going on here that we might not grasp the nuances of what the filmmaker is trying to accomplish.
Most likely, yeah.
Yeah. But overall, yeah, for whatever reason, I don't disagree with what either of you is saying, but I like this film, I think, a lot more than certainly Nathan.
Well, and I just want to say that the whole idea that the plot of this movie is that a man falls in love with a water nymph, we should be specific and say that we're not even really sure that that's the plot until halfway through the movie. So the entire time we're wondering what's going on. And then there's a really intriguing moment about halfway through Undina where it almost seems like it's going to fold back in on itself, where time is either repeating or we're seeing something in like reverse chronological order. And that doesn't really quite go anywhere. I almost wanted more of that, but I agree with you. I mean, I want this guy to keep making movies. And if people haven't seen Phoenix or Barbara, the other movie I mentioned, those are great. That would make a great double feature. Go look at those.
And we were speaking about Undina, the German film by Christian Petzold. This is Movies 101, and it's time to take a short break. Before we go, remember that you can access podcasts of Movies 101 by going online at SpokanePublicRadio.org. While there, check out the individual reviews that Nathan and I write. Don't do it now, though, because we'll be right back to look at Australia's The Dry and the documentary Super Frenchie. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
Hi, my name is Hiba Ahmed, and I am a producer with NPR's Weekend Edition. We like to say that nothing goes uncovered at Weekend Edition. We're trying to find the best person to possibly have the conversation with. And that might be an expert, or maybe it's somebody who's really at the heart of the story. Though you may only hear the voices of the hosts and the reporters, there's actually a ton of people behind the scenes who make every single segment come to life, whether that's a producer, an editor, an engineer, a fact checker. We all have the same mission in mind. We want to bring you the best journalism possible. I'm Hiba Ahmed. When you donate to the station, you support all the work that goes into bringing you the kind of journalism you expect from public radio. Here's how to give.
Just go to SpokanePublicRadio.org and click the donate button. Cheers to 50 years, and cheers to you.
And we're back. This is Movies 101, and I'm your host, Dan Webster. During the first half of the show, Mary Pat Truthart, Nathan Weinbinder, and I discussed the German film Undine. Let's now move to Australia's The Dry and then Super Frenchie. Let's begin by heading down under. Australia is a big place, a big arid place, in fact. And the Australian stereotype is that once you get outside the metropolises of Sydney, Melbourne, or Perth, the country is filled with tough, belligerent versions of Crocodile Dundee. The Dry, which is streaming on various sites and was directed and co-written by Robert Connolly, reinforces this stereotype. The film stars Eric Bana as an Australian federal cop who, called home to attend the funeral of a childhood friend, is forced to confront both the murder-suicide that the friend supposedly committed and the murder in which he himself had been implicated a couple of decades before. While the film, which is based on the 2017 novel by Jane Harper, never completely answers all the questions that it poses, Connolly at least keeps the mystery plot going for nearly all the film's two-hour running time. And if nothing else, it's entertaining to hear Bana, who has appeared in such films as Troy, Munich, and 2009's Star Trek remake, speak in his native accent.
It's interesting that we're talking about this movie this week, because next week, here's a little preview for everybody, we'll be talking about the miniseries Mayor of Easttown. And oddly enough, this movie and that series have a lot in common. And I feel like it's almost a subgenre unto itself, this idea of a detective from this specific rural place looking into a crime that involves way more people than we think. And as they go on, we realize everyone in the town has a dark secret that makes them a suspect. And then the detective themselves have some kind of dark history that they're grappling with that ties into all of this. And it makes sense that this is based on a novel, this movie, The Dry, because there are a lot of characters, many of whom are there just to kind of throw the scent off who the actual killer is. And I almost wish we had more time with them. At least a novel or a miniseries has the benefit of being able to kind of sprawl a little bit and introduce us to characters and give them shades beyond just being, you know, a suspect, essentially. But I agree with you. I mean, I think that Eric Bana is the person that pulls this whole thing together. It's a really assured dramatic performance. It's not showy. He doesn't have, you keep expecting him to have like a big emotional moment or a big, you know, breakdown or something. And as the movie goes back and forth between past and present. It becomes a little predictable, I think, even if he is, you know, a rock solid protagonist here. But I think that the movie is beautiful, and it's called The Dry because this place has been in a drought for over a year now. And that does play into the plot as it goes on. And we see how in the past there used to be water there. And I'm sure that's supposed to be a symbol for, I don't know, the hopefulness of youth or something like that. And it's been corrupted as time has gone on. But I was pulled along by this plot. I did not anticipate the ending, even though I'm still kind of confused. I won't give anything away, but I'm sort of confused as I know why the person did what they did, but I'm not totally sure why they did it to the person they did it to. I hope I tiptoed around that enough. I don't think the movie's clear enough about that. But yeah, for the most part, this is a really solid kind of Australian neo-noir mystery, which is a genre that I'm kind of a sucker for, going all the way back to something like Picnic at Hanging Rock.
Yeah.
And this isn't as dreamy or I think ultimately haunting and chilling as that movie is, but it has some of the same qualities.
You use the word haunting, and there is always or often something haunting about these different venues in Australia. And this one, I mean, you're right. The fact that what happened many years ago, which sort of hangs over this film, this death that happened when our protagonist was a teenager, sort of is there. And the area felt very different at the time. And now it's completely a dust bowl, basically.
It's crispy.
Yes. And so the question is, what role does that play, you know, in the whole plot line, the comparison between the past and the present and so forth? And these characters are introduced, they're sort of rolled out in various ways where you're sort of don't get a whole lot of context initially, but then gradually you get each of their backstories. And I thought it was fascinating the way it was done. And as you point out, Eric Bana was great in this movie, because he still maintains the physicality that we're used to seeing from him, but not in the extreme. And he doesn't really use that physicality in ways that you expect, because he is a pretty laid back, until he's not, character. And I don't know, I think this film is well worth watching.
You mentioned the water, Nathan. I also want to point out that fire also becomes an important thing. I mean, the fires in the distance that we know that raised Australia are there, and it's always a threat. And we might be able to see Eric Bana again as the same character, Aaron Falk, because Jane Harper's written a series of novels around this same character. So at any rate, that was The Dry. Let's close with Super Frenchy. In addition to teaching film at Eastern Washington University, Chase Ogden is a filmmaker in his own right. He took nearly a decade to make Super Frenchy, his look at Mathias Giraud, the French-born base jumping skier, and the results are impressive. The film played at the 2020 Spokane International Film Festival, which was lucky enough to finish its run just before the COVID-19 pandemic closed down the country, and was predictably a hit with audiences. Ogden not only shows us some of Giraud's fairly hairy stunts, one notable one involving a jump off Oregon's Mount Hood, but he also includes some family sequences that give us a glimpse of who this daredevil is behind the scenes. It too is now playing at the Magic Lantern and is well worth a watch. And both you and I, Nathan, have written about this film. So
yeah. And acrophobes need not apply for this one. And I mean, the most obvious comparison here is Free Solo, the Oscar winning documentary about the climber.
Alex Honnold.
Not just because of the stunts that you mentioned, but also because of the structure of the movie. And I interviewed Chase Ogden back when it played at SPIFF. And, you know, he told me that this movie was pretty much a decade in the making, that he met this guy, he started filming his stunts, and then realized that there was a longer form story and a personal story here as well. And like in Free Solo, there's a moment where all of a sudden this guy's personal life comes into play, and he realizes, I have a family now. Am I able to do these stunts that could kill me one of these days? And is that something I'm willing to risk? We also kind of meet his significant other and how she is handling it and how she mentally prepares for all of this. So
plus,
if you like that
his
movie,
mother.
You'll like this one. And that's the question that we always ask when people devote their lives to this kind of thing is, you know, why? And a lot of people say, well, the mountain was there, it had to be climbed or jumped off in this case. And I think I'm always fascinated by that because it's never
Right. Because it's such a question of like, what is addiction, obsession? Where's that line between, you know, healthy approaches and discipline and, you know, so
and
forth.
And chasing that adrenaline, that thrill that you get.
Right. Right. The fact that it took 10 years to make is just amazing and incredible to me. I think everyone would be fascinated by the stunts or the projects, I think, as he calls them, Super Frenchie calls them. But I think the fact that Chase Ogden was able to seamlessly weave in these other aspects, as you talk about, Nathan, I think really makes this film stand out from just a mere action film or a skiing film or an adventure film or an outdoor film. And so I, again, liked this one a lot.
By stressing the fact that there was a lot of personal information here, let's make it also clear that the action sequences in Super Frenchie are really pretty impressive. And there's at one point when we watched the movie, Mary Pat and I watched it together, that I went, holy, I mean, it was breathtaking at one point. And so Chase is a great guy, but he's made a really good movie here. And we should all support the Magic Lantern, no matter what's playing there. But when they play a movie like Super Frenchie that gives a local guy an added bonus, it's
a win-win-win.
Exactly, exactly. And that was Super Frenchie, and this is Movies 101. I'm Dan Webster, and early in the show, Nathan Weinbinder, Mary Pat Truthart, and I discuss the German film Undina and the Australian mystery The Dry. Let's take this moment to thank Peter Glarberg for both producing and engineering the show, and we thank you to our loyal listeners. We invite you back next week, same time, same spot on the radio dial, when we'll again check out all the best that cinema has to offer wherever we can find it. Until then, remember these words from the late English filmmaker Alan Parker. In the final scene of an American movie, they always produce the rabbit from the magician's top hat to the sound of cheers and applause. European films always shoot the rabbit. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
The Movies 101 podcast is made possible by the members of Spokane Public Radio. Become a member at SpokanePublicRadio.org. Thanks for listening to Movies 101.